Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, it's Sharon, and here's where it gets interesting. Raise your hand if you want salon perfect nails for just $2 a manicure. Yeah, me too. With the Olive & June Manny system, you can say goodbye to expensive services that take hours and hours and love your nails more than ever. I would know. I've been doing it for years. Get 20% off your first Manny system with code PERFECTMANNY20 at oliveandjune.com/PERFECTMANNY20. That's PERFECTMANNY20 at oliveandjune.com/PERFECTMANNY20.
We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
Ryan Reynolds here for, I guess, my 100th Mint commercial. No. I mean, honestly, when I started this, I thought I'd only have to do like 4 of these. I mean, it's unlimited premium wireless for $15 a month. How are there still people paying 2 or 3 times that much? I'm sorry, I shouldn't be victim blaming here. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch. Whenever you're ready.
$45 upfront payment equivalent to $15 per month. New customers on first 3-month plan only. Taxes and fees extra. Speeds slower above 40 gigabytes. See details.
Welcome to the Serial Killer Podcast, the podcast dedicated to serial killers, who they were, what they did, and how. Episode 228. I am your humble host, Thomas Rosalind Vyborg Thune. And tonight, I bring to you a true serial killer superstar. I went, dear listener, through my catalogue of killers. And to my surprise, I found that I had not covered this dark star. Well, it is time to remedy this. When we talk of serial killers, names that instantly pop up are Ted Bundy, Jack the Ripper, Edmund Kemper, and Joel Rifkin. That's right, none other than Joel the Ripper himself. A man so depraved, so devoid of humanity, that one can begin to question the nature of man when researching him and his acts. He is perhaps most famous for not just his many victims, at least 9, perhaps as many as 17 or even more, but for his eagerness to be interviewed. He talked at length of his crimes, and as such, he comes across as somewhat of an East Coast version of Ed Kemper. Tonight, we begin the tale of his life and crimes. Enjoy. This episode, like all other sagas told by me, would not be possible without my loyal Patreonies. They are Lisbeth, Russell, Lisa, Kathy, James, Cody, Kylie, Robert, Val, Madeline, Craig, Emily, the Duggletons, Jonathan, Jennifer, Lunavar, Roy, Cheryl, Richard, Brad, Laurie, Manuel, Haley, James, Jeff, Yulin, Meg, Crystal, and Ricky. You are truly the backbone of the Serial Killer Podcast, and without you, there would be no show. Thank you.
I am forever grateful for my elite TSK Producers Club. And I want to show you that your patronage is not given in vain. All TSK episodes will be available 100% ad-free to my TSK Producers Club on patreon.com/theserialkillerpodcast. No generic ads, no ad reads, no jingles. I promise. And of course, if you wish to donate $15 a month, that's only $7.50 per episode, you are more than welcome to join the ranks of the TSK Producers Club too. So don't miss out and join now.
The night hung heavy on the Long Island Parkway, a bruise-colored smear against the dying embers of dawn. Troopers Ruan and Spargaren, faces etched with the wariness of countless patrols, stared their squad car through the desolate expanse. A flicker of movement caught Ruan's eye, a rusted-out Mazda pickup, taillights black and dead, lumbering down the highway like a mechanical wraith. They hit the cherries, a red scream in the pre-dawn quiet, but the truck kept going, a wild dog spooked by the approaching storm. The chase unfolded like a fever dream beneath the harsh, sodium glow of the streetlights. Sirens wailed, a chorus of mechanical howls echoing off the empty buildings, as more squad cars joined the pursuit, their flashing lights painting the asphalt a strobing red. It was a ballet of violence, a predator and its prey locked in a deadly waltz at 90 miles an hour. The chase ended with a sickening crunch. The Mazda driver, cornered in a maze of deserted streets, slammed into a telephone pole at 3:36 a.m. He emerged from the wreckage, hands hanging limp at his sides, a mess of greasy hair, and a face obscured by a thick, white layer of noxema, a grotesque mask that would later send shivers down detectives' spines. His ID identified him as Joel Rifkin, 34, of East Meadow. His explanation for the missing license plate was a flimsy lie, his eyes flickering with a manic fear that belied the supposed minor traffic stop. The answer to his panic lay rusting in the back of the truck, drawn by a stench that hung heavy in the humid air. A trooper peeled back a blue tarp, revealing the source of the nightmare. A woman's body, naked and already succumbing to the ravages of decomposition, lay sprawled in the bed. The smell of death, thick and cloying, was a physical presence in the pre-dawn darkness. Rifkin's bravado crumbled like cheap plaster. He mumbled a confession, flat and emotionless. A prostitute, picked up in the city. A struggle gone wrong. He spoke of a lawyer, a formality in the face of the unspeakable horror before them. Booking was just the first act in a long, grim play. Detectives swarmed Rifkin's house, a modest two-story dwelling nestled among the suburban sprawl. Inside, they found a shrine to his darkness. Rifkin's upstairs room, a monument to depravity that defied comprehension. Dozens of pieces of women's jewelry, glinting like accusing eyes under the harsh light. Photographs. Snapshots of countless unsuspecting victims, their smiles frozen in horrifying innocence. A grotesque collection of women's belongings, each item a silent scream, a testament to a life extinguished. A driver's license belonged to Mary DeLuca, found dead months earlier. Another to Jenny Soto, fished from the murky depths of the East River. Rifkin's reading material was a macabre mix, a tattered paperback detailing the exploits of the Green River Killer, news clippings chronicling the atrocities of Arthur Shawcross. The stench hit them first in the cluttered garage.
a wheelbarrow overflowed with the crimson tide. Human blood, thick and viscous. A pair of women's panties lay discarded on the floor, a grotesque echo amongst the coils of rope and the rolled-up tarps. A chainsaw, its metallic teeth glinting in the harsh light, stood upright against the wall, stained a rusty red with the remnants of its grisly work, human flesh. Neighbors, questioned later, spoke of strange odors emanating from the garage. They'd assumed it was insecticide, a tool of his landscaping business. A terrible misunderstanding. A horrifying truth hidden in plain sight. It was the smell of death, and it would cling to Rifkin, a charnel house stench that no amount of scrubbing could erase. Long after the source was gone, the memory of that night, heavy and suffocating, would linger in the nostrils of justice. The stench would become a permanent fixture in the air, a constant reminder of the darkness that can fester beneath the most ordinary exteriors. But before we continue with the dark deeds done by Rifkin, let us wind back time. For in order to understand the man, we must look at his history. Joel entered the world in the dead of winter, the 20th of January, 1959, a mewling thing deposited into the sterile chaos of a New York lying-in hospital. The product of a fleeting encounter, a chance coupling between a callow college boy and a girl barely out of her teens, neither of whom had the stomach for the consequences. Unwanted, an afterthought in the grand scheme of their separate lives. So, he was cast out, surrendered to the impersonal machinery of the state. 3 weeks old, a bundle of whimpers and unknowing fear, he was deposited on the doorstep of another life. Benjamin Rifkin, a man weathered by years of quiet desperation, and his wife, Jean, a woman whose youthful dreams had curdled into a quiet suburban existence, took him in. Charity, perhaps, or a flicker of something deeper, a yearning for a fresh start lodged within their childless home. 3 years later, the echo of that yearning brought another child. A girl this time, a cooing, gurgling counterpoint to the growing boy. East Meadow, Long Island, a tidy sprawl of identical houses and manicured lawns, a haven for those seeking refuge from the urban chaos. It would be his world for most of his life, a stage upon which the drama of his existence would unfold. The Rifkins, a decent, unassuming couple, raised their children with a quiet normalcy. No reports of raised voices or shattered dinnerware marred the facade of their suburban idyll. Money wasn't a big issue. Benjamin's steady hand at his accounting job ensured a comfortable life, far removed from the gnawing anxieties of poverty. Yet within the boy, a darkness bloomed. A seed taking root in the fertile soil of his isolation. From the moment he stepped through the schoolhouse doors, his life became a gauntlet of relentless torment. Other children, with their cruel instincts honed to a razor's edge, sensed the difference in him. He was a solitary figure, an awkward frame cloaked in ill-fitting clothes, his oversized glasses magnifying the vulnerability in his eyes. An easy target, a canvas upon which they could scrawl their own brand of cruelty. The taunts began, a relentless chorus that echoed in the sterile hallways and spilled out onto the playground. He became the repository for their collective malice, a punching bag for their inchoate rage. He retreated further into himself, a silent, observant creature, his loneliness a palpable weight that pressed down on him with each passing day. School for young Rifkin was a brutal corollary to the world he'd entered. Though possessed of a mind that flickered with a certain brightness, an IQ that nudged 128, they would tell him later, his thoughts were tangled, snagged on unseen barbs. Words on the page danced and blurred, their meaning lost in a fog he couldn't pierce. A malady, they would eventually say, a twist in the wiring they couldn't quite mend, a learning disability, a fancy term for the frustration that gnawed at him, a constant reminder of his own inadequacy. But a true torment wasn't the frustration that simmered within. It was the cruelty that festered without. They called him Joel the Turtle, a moniker born of malice and keen observation. His gait, an awkward lope, a posture that seemed to hunch him perpetually towards the ground, earned him their scorn. He was slow, an easy mark, a creature forever out of step with the pack. Sports, a world of camaraderie and competition, were a closed book to him. No team would have him, their laughter echoing in the sterile locker rooms as they picked their sides, leaving him a solitary figure adrift in a sea of jocks. Theirs wasn't mere teasing, the barbs not flung with the careless cruelty of children. It was a relentless assault, a campaign waged with a cold and calculating brutality. He had done nothing to earn their ire, no transgression that sparked their malice. He was simply there, an easy target, a canvas upon which they could scrawl their own brand of darkness. Pranks born of a twisted imagination became a daily ritual, his books and lunch a constant casualty of their sadism. The taunts, a relentless chorus that echoed in the sterile hallways, morphed into something more physical. Shoves that sent him sprawling, a fist connecting with soft flesh. He became a creature of fear, the school a labyrinth of potential threats. The haven of his home offered scant solace. The outside world, the supposed sanctuary of his neighborhood, held its own terrors. He couldn't step outside without the specter of attack looming large, a verbal jab, a shove that sent him sprawling into the dirt. His world, once vast and full of possibility, shrunk to the confines of his own room, the only place where the torment ceased, if only for a fleeting moment. East Meadow High, a monument to adolescent cruelty disguised in a veneer of red brick and manicured lawns, became Rifkin's new purgatory. His grades, already a source of simmering tension within the Rifkin household, plummeted.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Farnoosh Tarabi, host of the Webby-winning podcast, So Money. If you're aiming for a goal, be it saving for a house, growing your family, or retiring, life makes it difficult to stay the course. But with a dedicated Merrill advisor, you get a personalized plan and a clear path forward. Having the bull at your back helps your whole financial life move with you. So when your plans change, Merrill's with you every step of the way. Go to ml.com/bullish to learn more. Merrill, a Bank of America company. What would you like the power to do? Investing involves risk. Merrill Lynch, Pierce, Fenner & Smith Incorporated, registered broker-dealer, registered investment advisor, member SIPC.
Further. His father, a man burdened by the weight of unfulfilled dreams, saw his son's struggles as a personal affront, his voice a rasp of disappointment echoing through the sterile living room. Why can't you do anything right, Joel? The words hung heavy in the air, constant reminder of his perceived inadequacies. His mother, Jean, a woman adrift in a sea of suburban ennui, remained oblivious to the storm raging within her son. She saw only a quiet, introverted boy, content with his solitude, a stark contrast to the boisterous laughter of his peers. Rifkin, already a target, became a beacon in the sea of adolescent malice. His very appearance, an unwitting caricature of the nerd archetype. High water pants revealing too much white sock, oversized glasses magnifying the fear in his eyes, screamed vulnerability. One tormentor, years later, would refer to him as an abuse unit. A creature whose mere presence seemed to inspire cruelty. He yearned for acceptance, a flicker of camaraderie in the desolate landscape of his high school existence. He joined the track team, a desperate attempt to forge a connection, only to be met with a new epithet, lardass, a cruel reminder of his physical awkwardness. His head was repeatedly shoved into toilets, a daily ritual of humiliation, his clothes a constant casualty of their sadism. But Rifkin, with a naivete born of desperation, clung to the hope of redemption. He tried a different tactic, appeasement. He invited his tormentors into his own home, offering beer and the flickering glow of the television as a peace offering. They came, of course, not for companionship, but for the sheer amusement of witnessing his pathetic attempts at inclusion. The camera, entrusted to him for the yearbook staff, vanished, another casualty in their relentless campaign. Yet he persisted, fueled by a delusional optimism. He slaved over the yearbook, a monument to a life he desperately craved, only to be excluded from the celebratory gathering that marked its completion. Graduation, in 1977, arrived as a bittersweet release. He emerged from the halls of East Meadow High, clutching a diploma that held the weight of 1,000 humiliations, yet harboring a fragile hope, college, a fresh start, a chance to reinvent himself, to shed the skin of Joel the Turtle and emerge, at last, as someone worthy of acceptance. It was a hope, however, that would soon be dashed upon the unforgiving rocks of reality. Rifkin dreamt of girls, the way a starving man craved a banquet. He yearned for whispered secrets, stolen glances across the crowded cafeteria, the shy fumbling for a hand in the flickering light of a movie theater. But the bullies, those ever-present shadows, cast a long and grotesque leer over his attempts. His first foray into the perilous landscape of dating was a clumsy, egg-splattered disaster. A girl, her name lost to the fog of memory, had agreed to a movie, a flickering escape into the world of on-screen romance. But the track team, those sadistic jocks who thrived on the misery of others, had other plans. They trapped him in the echoing gym, the stale air thick with the scent of sweat and humiliation. Eggs, a barrage of yolk and white, rained down on him, the stench clinging to his clothes like a second skin. He fled, tears blurring his vision, a whimpering mess who had to call his father to extract him from his self-inflicted purgatory. The second attempt wasn't much better. This time, a tentative spark had ignited, a shy smile exchanged in the hallway. They snuck out, a stolen moment under the cloak of twilight, their destination a greasy spoon pizza parlor on the edge of town. But the specter of his tormentors loomed large. Spotted through the grimy window, they became the harbingers of another humiliation. A chase unfolded, a desperate scramble down littered streets, laughter echoing in their wake. They found refuge in the hushed embrace of the local library, the scent of old paper and forgotten stories a temporary balm to his wounded pride. But the damage was done. The date, understandably shaken, retreated, leaving Rifkin alone with the ghosts of his shattered dreams. By the time he reached Nassau Community College, a squat, uninspiring building on Long Island, romance was a distant, almost mythical concept. College life, as depicted in movies and television, held the promise of liberation, a chance to reinvent himself. But the reality was a monotonous blur of lectures and textbooks. He found himself drawn to the familiar comfort of his room, skipping classes with an alarming regularity. The spark of curiosity, once a flickering ember within him, had been snuffed out by the relentless cruelty of his high school years. By the end of the first year, the weight of missed classes and unlearned material bore down on him. He had managed to scrape through a single course, a solitary accomplishment dwarfed by the vast emptiness of his academic record. He was adrift, a rudderless ship in a sea of indifference, and the future stretched before him, a desolate landscape devoid of hope. Rifkin, adrift in the post-adolescent doldrums, decided a change of scenery was in order. Fall of 1978 found him matriculating at SUNY Brockport, a beige brick outpost perched on the fringes of Rochester. Here, amidst the burgeoning flock of pre-meds and aspiring social workers, bloomed a fledgling photography club. Rifkin, ever the social wallflower, found himself drawn to the click and whir of developing cameras, a world of controlled chaos, far removed from the emotional maelstrom of his own life. And then, a breakthrough. A girl, a name lost to the annals of time, saw something beneath the surface of Rifkin's perpetual melancholia. A flicker of something artistic. Sensitive. Depressive, for sure, the girl confided in her friends, but undeniably sweet. Alas, the bloom quickly wilted. Rifkin, a man perpetually shrouded in a fog of self-doubt, couldn't sustain the charade. The darkness, a constant companion, cast a long shadow, chilling the nascent romance. Sweet, she would sigh. The word dripping with a honeyed sympathy that only amplified his sense of inadequacy. But so sad, all the time. The words echoed in the cavernous halls of his psyche, a stark reminder of the war raging within. Academics, once a flickering ember of ambition, sputtered and died. Textbooks became mausoleums of unopened knowledge, Lectures, a monotonous drone that failed to pierce the fog of his despair. He drifted through his days like a ghost haunting the ivied halls. His attendance spotty at best. The dream of a degree, a passport to a brighter future, dissolved into dust. By 1980, defeat clung to him like a rumpled polyester leisure suit. He slunk back to the familiar, albeit suffocating embrace, of his parents' suburban split level. Nassau Community College, a monument to his past failures, beckoned once more. This time, however, the charade proved even more unsustainable. The graveyard of skipped classes grew into a sprawling necropolis. Apathy, a thick, suffocating fog, choked any remaining vestiges of academic ambition. 1984 saw the inevitable curtain fall. He left Nassau, not with a bang, but with a whimper. Another unfulfilled promise clinging to his back like a shadow. The world of work offered no solace. Jobs, a kaleidoscope of menial tasks, stocking shelves at Kmart, flipping burgers at Wendy's, came and went with alarming regularity. He was a specter of unreliability, his personal hygiene a testament to the inner turmoil. The simplest tasks seemed to confound him, leading one exasperated manager to mutter under his breath that Rifkin couldn't count change to save his life. Dreams, however, flickered stubbornly in the recesses of his mind. He yearned to be a bard, a weaver of words that would capture the essence of the human condition, a chronicler of the urban wasteland. He envisioned himself as a writer of renown, his name etched in the pantheon of literary giants. But the stories that flowed from his pen, like ink bleeding from a festering wound, were dark and disturbing, reflections of the abyss that yawned within him. And of course, with him having severe dyslexia, the pages were filled with errors, and he barely managed to string two sentences together that made sense. Horticulture and photography, once passions that offered a glimmer of light, remained unfulfilled. The vibrant world of flora and fauna, the ability to capture fleeting moments in time, these were skills that eluded him, forever out of reach. His life became a nomadic existence, punctuated by returns to the haven, or perhaps the prison, of his parents' home. Each failed job, each broken promise, chipped away at his already fragile spirits. Then, in 1986, a cruel blow. Benjamin Rifkin, his father, a man already burdened by emphysema, received a diagnosis that sent a fresh wave of despair crashing over the household. Prostate cancer. The once vibrant man became a wraith, consumed by chronic pain. In February 1987, Benjamin made a chilling decision. He chose to end his suffering, overdosing on barbiturates. He lingered in a coma for 4 days before passing away. At the funeral, Rifkin delivered a eulogy that brought tears to mourners' eyes. But the eulogy wasn't just for his father. It was a lament for a life half-lived, a future filled with uncertainty and a darkness that threatened to consume him whole. Fall arrived, crisp and brittle. Rifkin, adrift on a sea of his own anxieties, found himself deposited on the sterile shores of the State College of Technology. Horticulture, the cultivation of life from the dead earth, held a morbid fascination for him. He enrolled in a 2-year program, a desperate grasp for something tangible, something that might bloom in the wasteland of his existence. And bloom it did for a time. He surprised even himself with a fierce dedication, the books yielding their secrets with a grudging respect. Straight A's, stark black marks on a white page, a testament to a flicker of unexpected discipline. This, in turn, led him to an internship at Planting Fields, a sprawling arboretum nestled amongst the moneyed enclaves of Oyster Bay. An honor, they had called it. Rifkin, for once, felt a sliver of something akin to pride pierce the calloused shell of his self-loathing.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hi, this is Jonathan Fields, host of The Good Life Project, where each week I talk to listeners about investing in their future by increasing their own vitality. But when it comes to those financial goals, whether it be saving for a home renovation, growing your child's college fund, or travel, life can make it difficult to stay the course. By working with a dedicated Merrill advisor, you get a personalized plan and a clear path forward. Having the bull at your back helps your whole financial life move with you. So when your plans change, Merrill's with you every step of the way. Go to ml.com/bullish to learn more. Merrill, a Bank of America company. What would you like the power to do? Investing involves risk. Merrill Lynch, Pierce Fenner and Smith Incorporated, registered broker dealer, registered investment advisor, member SIPC.
There, amongst the manicured gardens and sculpted landscapes, he encountered a vision, a girl, hair the color of bleached wheat, a smile that could coax a bloom from the most barren stone. He was drawn to her with the thirst of a man who has just crossed the Sahara. He would follow her, a shadow in her wake, his gaze a silent plea for recognition. Dates, the very word of foreign concept, remained a whispered fantasy in the labyrinthine corridors of his mind. He convinced himself of a clandestine affair, a romance blooming in the fertile soil of his delusions. But reality, a harsh mistress, shattered his fragile construct. Her indifference, a palpable weight in the air, drove him to the precipice. Frustration, a venomous serpent coiling around his insides, reached a fever pitch. The fragile facade he had constructed crumbled, leaving him exposed and raw, a creature teetering on the brink. The seeds of violence, long dormant, began to sprout in the fertile darkness within. And with that, we come to the end of part one in the saga of Joel the Ripper Rifkin. Next episode, I will bring to you part two. So, as they say in the land of radio, stay tuned.